We have a guest. Two guests. Actually, we have a guest and a guest host today. This is going to be so much fun because our guest today is Alex Shapiro and our guest host is Laura Koplowitz. This is so much fun. Say hi!
Hi.
That's
Hello
Alex.
There.
That's Laura. This is great.
We can set this out.
I feel like I should ask, you know, bachelor number one.
Yes. It's all true. Alex, you're coming by the way of the Raoul McDonald column.
Actually, nearby there. I was there last year, but this year I was coming by way of the Walden School, this fabulous summer session for young upcoming composers, where I was composer in residence.
Wait a minute. Oh, you're composer. Wait, are you young and upcoming, or are you the resident
composer?
No.
I was the resident composer. I'm old and downgoing, I think, at this point.
That's a long hill, though.
It is a long hill, let me tell you. It's bumpy, too.
We're way ahead of you.
I need new shock absorbers.
Well, welcome to Calvis and Damien. This is great to have you here.
It is so cool to meet you guys, finally, after seeing you on the web all this time.
And Laura, we haven't seen in 15 years, and welcome to you. And you're going to ask the really kind of crucial questions of Alex, because you've known her for a long time, and you know what to ask her to embarrass her, which is the idea here.
Well, Alex and I have known one another since the 70s.
Since 1978.
Well, you were both three.
Where we encountered one another when we were both diaper babies at the Aspen Music Festival. Alex was there as a composer, and I was there in the classical guitar world for a moment. And interestingly enough, I met her when she was playing the guitar. And it was the start of a very warm and wonderful friendship. And then we reacquainted ourselves fairly recently, discovering that we were both on a similar path with composing. And Alex is just a great person, as we will all hear and come to know.
I pay her really well for this.
It's just great. It's fantastic. Actually, you guys pulled up to the restaurant. We went to lunch before the show today, and you pulled up in this red convertible. And for all the world, as you guys pulled in, and I was sitting inside already, it looked like Thelma and Louise were arriving. It was just fantastic.
The Vermont road trip.
The
sequel.
Trip. Exactly.
What happened when they landed from the bottom of that cliff?
Exactly. Yeah, they came up. Well, never mind. So tell us your story. I have this great biography, but it's just tremendously long. You studied with people, and you did stuff, and you left town.
And that's about it. That's all that's happened.
Kind of the summary of what you've done to sort of get to this point, and then we'll hear some music.
It's a very quick summary. I am a happy composer. I grew up in...
I thought that was a mutually exclusive.
You'd think, but no, that was in the 19th century. It was mutually exclusive. Now we're allowed to be
happy.
Now
it's just an oxymoron.
Exactly. I grew up in Manhattan. And which was a fabulous place to grow up if you're going to be scribbling notes on a page, because you're surrounded by all sorts of great scribblers and great music makers, and availed myself of lots of that. Got a great education, came out to the West Coast when I was 21, and never left. And I've been living in L.A. for 21 years now. Outside of L.A., I've been in Malibu for the past 10 years.
Right. L.A., that's one thing. Malibu, that's something
else.
Yes,
they are, in fact, two very different things. But in fairness, just to give myself some amount of street cred, I started my first 10 years in Van Nuys.
We call it tree cred here.
Very cute. I lived the first 10 years in Van Nuys, which is less than spectacular, shall we say. It's a fine place, but it's not exactly like Malibu. So
what I want to know is, there's this interview. I've been getting dirt on you here, and there's this interview. Tell me about the jingle business.
I don't know very much about it, because actually I left it. I left it fairly quickly. I barely got my big toe wet in it when I decided it really wasn't what I wanted to do. I had a wonderful teacher at Manhattan School of Music, Roy Eaton, who at the time I think was head of music department at Benton & Bowles ad agency. And he let me come to sessions with him, and I had already started doing some commercial scoring just on some local documentaries for local New York cable stuff. And I would go to his sessions and, you know, get a sense of that business and start trotting some jingles around town, et cetera. And I realized pretty quickly that I wanted life to be a little longer than 30 seconds. And
doing
what?
But, yeah, but we'd like to hear one if you have one.
Oh, no. I actually did not bring any jingles with me whatsoever. I hate to tell you that.
But certainly you can remember some.
Rounders. Da-da-da. You know, I can't. I remember there was a cracker.
You're there. You're almost there. Go ahead.
I think I need the backup. Rounders. The cracker that snaps, rounders. You need a snack. You can see why I got out of that business really quickly. I got out before I started, trust me.
Right after the Rounders company went
bankrupt.
Yeah,
exactly. There you go. I'm probably defaming their good name right now.
let's hear something. You got something we can start with?
Yeah, let's start with something. I feel like we should start with something ridiculously goofy, but in fact, I'm going to go the opposite direction. We're going to ramp our way up. And I'm going to start, since we're talking about Malibu, I will just mention that I am really lucky to live in a gorgeous area and a very beautiful natural area. And the ocean is a huge part of my life. And I always say that if I hadn't become a musician, I think I would have become a marine biologist because I really, really love all things ocean-related. And I spent a lot of time at the tide pools. And a commission came in last year, in 2003, for a string quintet that was commissioned by a wonderful series in Los Angeles called the Pacific Serenades Concert Series. And they asked for a piece of, you know, this is a three-movement piece, and I decided to call it Current Events, and it's track 5. And just to give you an intro into it, the first movement is Surge, as in storm surge. Second movement is Ebb, as in ebb tide. And the third movement is Rip, as in rip tides. And it's about the ocean as well as the more internal waves.
Yeah, I was getting Surge as in Koussevitzky, and Ebb as in Ebenezer Scrooge, and Rip as in Rip Taylor.
You know, and that works for me too, actually.
Rip Torn.
That works fine. The musicians are Mwako Watanabe and Connie Kupka on violins, Victoria Miskulcy and David Walther on violas, and David Speltz on cello.
This premiere, or is
this is a premiere recording. It was premiered about 3 weeks before this recording was made. They did it on 3 concerts, and it's being done again in Los Angeles by another group, the Melody Chamber Orchestra, in January.
Fantastic! So, very wet music from Alex Shapiro.
Hello, bonjour. My name is Laura. You're listening to Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar, your one stop for non-pop on the Non-Pop International Network. Or as we say from the Karamura papers, perhaps we'd better go, Flood.
Yes, how did you know? Here on WGDR Plainfield.
Now, there's a comma between go and flood. Flood is not the verb.
Or as we pronounce it sometimes in my country, p-flood.
Yes, excellent.
We just heard Current Events, a string quintet and 3 movements by Alex Shapiro. That's a great piece. Very, Shostakovichian in some ways.
I think it has some elements of that. You know, I think one of the coolest things about being a composer is that you're this culmination of all the history that came before you musically, and you sop it all up, and then it all comes out, hopefully sounding rather like you more than the other people. But all those other people and ghosts are sort of present.
And all the while I was hearing the piece, I kept thinking, rounders, rounders, rounders.
Speaking of ghosts.
Alex, I have a quick question about the piece that
Laura,
we just
Laura heard. Koplowitz is our co-host here.
Hello, this is Laura.
My dear old friend. Not you, actually, she's not old, but we've just been friends a long time.
We have been in the prime of our youth for many years.
We continue to be in the prime of our youth.
Yes, yes. Alex, I'm very interested in the piece that we just heard as a quintet. Mm-hmm. Is played by an ensemble that does play regularly together.
Varying combinations. Mm-hmm. They're part of a group. Many of them are Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra players. Many of them are well-known players around Los Angeles and elsewhere. And many of them have known each other for probably 20 years and have played in various combinations with other instruments. But they themselves are not a quintet. But they came together for this momentous occasion.
Well, the ensemble sounds so cohesive, yeah, and very much as if it's an ensemble that plays together regularly. And this gives rise to a question that I have to you about the rehearsal process. Mm. Clearly, this is a very difficult, it's a difficult work.
Yeah, it is.
One that makes many demands of each of the players. And a piece that has many moods, involves various technical prowesses that the players must know, obviously, independently. And then as an ensemble, they have to work together extremely closely to pull this piece off, which they've done beautifully. Can you tell us a little bit about the rehearsal process leading into this premiere?
Well, it was a lot of fun, and I think the joy for any composer, I mean, we are nothing without the musicians who play our work and bring it to life from being the little black dots on the page, which are rather meaningless, until they come into the hands of the players, and then it's magical. And I think because the five of these players were such great musicians, it did come together very quickly. They did not have a lot of rehearsal time before the first Downbeat premiere, which happened last March, as I recall. And they're just such pros. They pull it together very quickly. I made some changes. One of my most favorite things to do is if I can be present for a rehearsal of a premiere, to be able to make very minor but helpful last-minute changes, especially in string pieces. Change, some fingerings, change a double stop that isn't working, or something is just not as viable as I thought it would be because I'm not a string player. I'm completely daunted by string writing, actually. I find it's the most terrifying thing of virtually all the instruments for me.
Why is that? Many composers say that. Why is that?
I know. I think there's something about just the physical nature of the instrument that if you don't play it, it just seems a little bit mystical, how it all happens. I mean, I play guitar, I play piano, I play a little flute. All of these things make sense. A lot of composers will talk about organ and harp and guitar, actually, as being probably the three most challenging instruments to write for because they seem so far afield from what we're used to. But I think strings are very daunting to do well, to really do well. But the rehearsal process was a lot of fun because it was so interactive and collaborative because to be able to, at the drop of a hat, listen to a passage and then say, first violin, we can drop that note, yada, yada, and make it easier for them to come across because the most important thing is the gesture in music. The audience is not hearing every last 16th note in its individual glory. What they're hearing is the swath of sound from point A to point B. And as a composer, that's my greatest joy, is making sure that the musicians sound and look great, that it fits well under their hands, whatever their instrument is. And of course, the side benefit is I end up looking pretty good too if they can pull it off. But the most important thing is that the audience, they're getting the full gesture of the experience. They're not hearing every single little note. They're hearing the big picture of it.
But as time passes and an audience gets more familiar with a piece, they hear into that detail.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'll tell you, modern composers, living composers, should be so lucky that our pieces are played enough times that people get familiar with them. I mean, one of the sad things right now is that it's hard for a lot of people to get many, many, many performances of their pieces. I've actually been very lucky with a number of pieces in my catalog. They've been making the rounds. But still, it's not as if anyone's as familiar with these pieces as they're going to be with, with a Mozart quintet.